Hey guys, this is day number 3 of this week of podcasts that we are calling February Surprise.
Yes, because it is still February
Surprise. Surprise. Jeff, who'd we have on so far this week?
We started off with Wyclef Jean. People might know him from a little thing he did called Guantanamera.
Yes.
We had DJ Jubilee on yesterday.
Right.
She's from Miami and Mixpack.
That's right.
And today we have Cam from Henny Palooza.
His government name is Cameron McCullough, for anybody who has a lawsuit and you're looking for him.
Anybody who's wondering how they get a plus 20 into Henny Palooza. Anybody who's wondering how they get their money back if they were looking for just ginger ale at Henny Palooza.
Here's the thing. Cam answers all your questions here on this very episode, but before we get into all that, Jeff,
yeah,
I would like to make a little statement. Now, guys, whether you've been rocking with us for nearly a decade, or if you're brand new to us, thanks to this very here podcast, we appreciate you. We're just two kids who grew up loving hip-hop music and hip-hop culture, and a decade in, we are so grateful that we've carved our own lane within this world. Whether it was weekly sketch videos, absurdist interviews on MTV, podcasts, or music videos, you guys have been there to support, to spread the word, and to push us forward.
In just a few weeks, we are going to be living out our dream and headlining SOBs here in New York City. It is called Your Girls Tour. And you know who's been on that stage. Everybody from Kanye to Drake to John Legend to 2 Chainz and now us. And now, having attended a million concerts at SOBs over the last 10 years, we know what kind of opportunity this is, and we've been working very hard over the last 2 months getting ready for an unforgettable night.
So, here's the thing. We don't just want to show up. Like we've done our whole career, let's aim for the sky and let's sell SOBs out.
And this is where you can help. New York City.
Brooklyn.
The Bronx.
Westchester.
New Jersey.
Connecticut.
And beyond. If you love It's the Real, if you appreciate what we bring to the game, if our podcast is the soundtrack to your commute, if we bring laughs to an otherwise shitty day, show us some love for this concert and buy your tickets today to Your Girls Tour on February 23rd. Tickets are literally the price of a movie, and please know that this night will be a movie.
Go to itsthereal.com right now and let's make history together. Jeff, on the podcast today, we have Cameron McCullough, Henny Palooza. We talked about growing up in Harlem.
Talked about growing up in Buffalo. We talked about going to school in Buffalo and thinking that you're going to be a football player and then finding out, you want to know what? Dreams get crushed.
That's right. We talked about how we launched Henny Palooza. He answers all your questions today. Great episode. When do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up, it's Eric, a.k.a. Flat Tire, a.k.a. Stop Trippin'.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Facts Only, a.k.a. Snapple Cap.
Oh, this is where you go, man. Yeah.
Yo, it's Cam. I used to be Big Fact, now I'm just Facto Gigante. All
so, right, yeah. Yeah, this is a waste of time with this for real. Cam, what's happening?
Fellas, what's going on,
Everything
man?
Is good. Thanks for coming through on a Sunday.
Thank you for having me on a Sunday.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
You know, it's the Sabbath.
It is.
I'm glad to be here with my two favorite Jews.
Hey. Yes. So,
wait, isn't our Sabbath is on Saturday?
Your Sabbath is Saturday.
Listen, yeah. Listen, we're here like 7 days a week. We're all about it. Like,
you really should have been here yesterday, though.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
In theory.
So you said you were going to go to church today,
yes.
But you watched from home.
Yes. Hopefully my mom doesn't catch wind of this podcast.
Is she a regular listener?
She has listened to a few shows that I've been on.
She listened to your Tax Zone interview?
The first one. Wow. She did. I don't think she listened to the second one where there
she
was
still
a
lets you hang out with your friends?
So I kind of tricked my mom. Like, you know, like those guys kind of just work for me.
Right.
I'm obligated to hang with them for certain hours of the day. But no, she my mom would be like highly disappointed if she found out that I watched church from home. So, but I did.
But that's better than like avoiding it at
exactly,
all costs.
So. Yeah, exactly.
That's how you explain it to her.
Exactly. I'm like, Mom, it's like it's a stepping stone.
Right. You know? Yeah. So. I was tuned in. Yeah.
I was tuned in. Like
Jesus. The pew was just at home.
Exactly. I actually had a better view of the minister than the people sitting in the back of
that's
the church.
That's like, yeah. That's like why go to the football game when
exactly.
I have the best seat in the house right in front of my TV.
Exactly.
You
exactly.
Know? So, what'd you learn from church today?
Couple things.
Okay.
So the first, it was about like not rushing to judgment and things of that nature, which is really ironic considering the times that we're living.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But so it was about like not rushing to judgment, you know, and like thinking things through and kind of like within all of that, being selfless, which was dope.
Okay.
I think it was more a life lesson than a spiritual lesson.
Right.
It was dope.
Yeah.
You know, after that, I went to the gym to be more selfless.
Right. Yeah, work it off.
Yeah. You know, working all this.
Shed those times. Yeah.
Working all this selfish shit off of me.
Yeah. And here we are.
Here we are.
But the most exciting thing outside of all of that, mm-hmm. that sort of transpired recently, is that you guys announced a whole bunch of dates.
Yes.
To take Henny Palooza,
yes.
which is your baby.
Yes, my child.
Like, to new cities that you'd never been to.
Right.
And out of the country.
Right.
So, real quick,
yeah.
Where are you going? You're going, I saw Atlanta's on there?
We've got, shit, this is only.
Chicago?
Chicago, we've got Atlanta.
Miami.
Miami this weekend, actually. New Orleans for All-Star.
New Orleans.
Chicago, we got Houston. I have to, like, say them in order.
Yeah,
like an Excel spreadsheet in my head. But then we've got L.A. again.
Okay.
This will be our fourth time in L.A., which is crazy, even considering.
You're going to the Caribbean.
Yes, we are going to St. Thomas.
Yes. St. Thomas.
So this is technically our second time in the Caribbean. We went to Bermuda.
Okay.
2 years ago, but that was kind of as a part of someone else's weekend, whereas this, we're going during Carnival in St. Thomas, but it's strictly Henny Palooza, which... quite frankly, I have no idea how that's going to turn out.
Oh,
well, you should talk to your minister about St. Thomas.
Yes. I mean, I'm sure he has an offshore fund there, so he probably knows a few things about the islands that I don't.
What is St. Thomas the saint of?
I don't know.
I hope your mom doesn't listen to this podcast.
I know.
I think he's the saint of hedonism Henny Palooza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
Hennessy.
Yeah. You
know. The saint of swag surfing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. In the scene of overconsumption.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Henny Palooza now, a few years into this whole reign, is basically synonymous with the drink.
Right.
And, you know, we'll get into, like, how the party started and everything, like, in a little bit. But was there ever a thought of changing it into something else? Like, you know, now you're synonymous with Hennessy.
Right.
Did you ever think, like, oh, we should have done this for, like, high-end cars?
Yeah.
Like, I wish that people would just bring me, like, high-end cars instead.
Yeah, you know? I mean... It's so funny, like, when you have a good idea and, you know, you get years into it and, you know, things start materializing, you think, wow, the idea wasn't really that good in the first place.
I could have stuck with this good idea.
I could have done so much more with this good idea. But, yeah, we thought about changing the name 1,000 times. I mean, you know, for
Loco Palooza.
Listen, I'd name it Bud Light Palooza if I could. But, you know, whoever's cutting the check.
Yeah. It's just a real, like, laid back, you know, watching football.
It's a kickback, man. Everybody's wearing, you know, an XL shirt.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, there's stale tortilla chips.
That's right. Stale tortilla chip palooza. I'm with it.
It's a bunch of 18-year-olds.
I'm not mad.
Legit. Yeah. Legit. Just
okay. So where are you originally from?
I was born in Harlem.
Where in Harlem?
In Mount Sinai Hospital.
Okay.
And then my parents moved me and my sisters. I have two older sisters.
Yeah.
We moved to Buffalo, New York, which is why I ended up at Buffalo State College.
Well, how young were you when you moved?
I was super young. So I want to say I was maybe 4.
So in you know...
what memories do you have of Harlem at that age?
Crack.
Okay, sure.
Lots of crack in the 80s. A lot of abandoned buildings. The West Side was kind of still up and coming.
It was,
in,
you know, well, it was undeveloped, yeah.
Exactly. Undeveloped, that's a better word for it. And then the East Side was terrible.
Yeah.
Still is. But that's where we lived.
And how much older are your sisters than you?
My sisters are 3 and 5 years older than me. So we were born 1980, 82, 85.
And so your whole life really is Buffalo then, right? So you go up there and what's growing up in Buffalo like?
Cold.
Well,
snow.
Besides the obvious, cold, very snowy.
Yeah.
Very interesting town. So it's like any other place in the world, it's sectioned. So you have where it's sectioned kind of between class. Buffalo is like really poor, but there is like the middle class are essentially rich in Buffalo. So between that, you have this place called like North Buffalo, which is where if you want your kid to go to a good school, you live in North Buffalo. And they have there's like Nichols High School, which is Christian Leitner's high school. And then you've got like really good schools there. And then you've got the public schools. I was kicked out of public school.
Kicked out?
At a very young age.
What did you do at a young age?
So I've always considered myself a visionary since a very young age. Yeah. So I was in the second grade. So at the time I was
seven
years old. Yeah. Like, yep. It's 1992.
3 years out of Harlem.
Yeah. 3 years removed. And we were in class, and, you know, it's public school. You say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag every morning, mm-hmm. sing the national anthem, and all that stuff.
Which is what we're going to be doing every day now that we are in Trump's America.
Exactly. So I, for whatever particular reason, decided that I wasn't going to say the Pledge to the flag that day. Not even trying to be problematic, just more so being a dick to my teacher.
Okay.
But
that is problematic, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's very problematic. Yeah. In hindsight, very problematic.
Being a dick to yeah.
But I sat through the whole thing, and my teacher, like, is this Italian guy, Mr. Salvo, and he's like super like mad. He's like, he's getting red in the face, and he's like, "Yo, man, like, what's your problem?" I said, "I just didn't feel like standing. I feel like this is pretty redundant with, like, you know, I'm 7 years old saying redundant." Mm-hmm. But, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But then, so I'm like, you know, so it's like, go to the office, right?
Yeah.
So I go to the office. I'm like, no big deal. Like, I've been in the principal's office like 4 times already, which in the second grade could be problematic.
Right.
So I sit in there, and, you know, the assistant principal, it's like really intense. And I'm like, oh, guys, it's just the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. And it's like, oh, you're degrading America and blah, blah, blah. I'm 7 years old. And I'm like,
holy
whatever.
Shit, you were Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, legit. Yeah. At 7 years old. So I was like, oh, man, call my mom. Like, my mom will understand. Like, yeah. So my mom comes to pick me up. They suspend me for 3 days. And
you got suspended?
In the second grade.
Second grade.
I was suspended for 3 days, which was the best 3 days ever. Yeah. Because I didn't have to go to school. The only problem is I had to eat, like, really, really shitty lunch because my sister was making it for me before she left for school. And so I was eating, like, cold bologna sandwiches and lettuce. It was really terrible. It's like a jail meal.
I mean, that's what happens when you disrespect the flag.
Exactly. So, again, it's kind of foreshadowing for what the America that we're living in now. But, yeah, I was a really smart kid, but I was a really bad kid.
So they asked you not to come back.
No, I got to come back.
Oh,
I got to come back. They let me in. They let me back into school. I finished out my second grade year. Third grade was really problematic because I hated my teacher.
Yeah.
If I knew what the word was back then, I mean, she was racist.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably top two in my class as far as academics. So it was really hard to, like, justify suspending the super smart kid.
Right.
It's like, yeah, it's no way he can be doing that. He has a 98.9 average. And she's like, no, he's too smart for his own good. He's always questioning authority, blah, 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 which I was. But
he's trying to learn.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. In a public school. Go
yeah.
figure.
Yeah.
So third grade.
What was the racial, like, makeup of your... of your class?
I'd say,
like, were you the one black kid, or were you?
No, but I was one of few. So I'd say if it's a classroom of 30 kids, there are 9 black kids.
Mm-hmm.
9 black kids, 10 maybe, 12 if we were in gym. Mm-hmm. So
your math was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, legit. So so that was fun. And third grade was kind of a struggle. I got suspended 3 times for being problematic. One time me and my boy were sliding down the railings, you know, like kids do on the stairs on our way to lunch.
Yeah.
And I ended up busting my head on the floor.
Oh, God.
And bleeding out. And I got suspended
for
sliding
yourself
downstairs. Yeah. So it was like a double whammy. I got staples in my head, and I got 4 days off of school. And that was the first time, I think, that my mother was actually disappointed in me.
But how was the lunch while you were suspended?
So I was really upset because it was goulash that day.
Oh,
and,
well.
You know, we had a system in school where if it was goulash, pasta, or anything like that, my boy used to hold all the salt packets. So he was like kind of like the salt consulate. So you had to go to him to get
what kind
salt.
Of system is this?
Yep, we were ahead of our time.
Yeah, honestly, sounds like barter system.
But goulash, is that because, like, Buffalo is such a Polish town?
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Exactly. It's heavily Polish, heavily Italian, mm-hmm. Some Jew, and then black. Mm-hmm. Straight black. And then, like, very, very small section of Puerto Ricans. I grew up with a lot of Puerto Ricans, mm-hmm. too.
So this guy was hoarding all the salt.
He was hoarding all the salt. But
he was the
my
king
boy.
Of salt. Yeah.
He was my boy. His name was Jerome. Shout out to Jerome.
Shout out to Jerome.
Jerome.
Shout out to Jerome. The salt king.
Yeah, yeah. The salt king. Nickname Tank, you can imagine.
Yeah.
He was holding salt.
Like, yeah, right. Yeah. Right,
pretty
right.
big guy. but no, it was... So I lunch was great that day. They let me eat it in the office before they told me to go home. And then I finished out third grade. And literally at the end of my third grade year, they were like, yeah, he can't come back.
Can't come back.
So my mother...
Where'd you go?
My mother, being the, you know, problem solver that she is, she found this school. It was a Christian school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You needed some God in your
life. Yeah, I needed some God. And it was fourth grade, so I got there, and I went from literally a 30-person classroom to about a 50-person school. Like, there were six kids per grade.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so real culture shock for me. No girls. Uniforms.
Are we talking nuns?
No, Christians. So, okay. Deaconesses. Okay. And
we don't know
anything. Yeah. No, like deaconess-
You're all the same, right?
Yeah, legit. They all look alike.
We honestly only know about St. Thomas.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So the name of the school was St. John Christian Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And it,
because they have to hammer it home.
Yeah, like, hey. You're here to be a Christian.
Right.
Yeah. Granted, we wore bow ties, but neither here nor there.
Bow ties, well, slacks, shirt, yeah, like the whole
legit
thing.
I actually, I have a picture. I may not show you. So I get there, and I'm in fourth grade for maybe 3 days. And a fourth grade teacher is like, this kid is way too advanced to be in the fourth grade. We think we want to skip him a grade. And my mom was like, no, wait it out, whatever. So I finished fourth grade, get to fifth, and fifth grade teacher's like, he absolutely does not belong in the fifth grade. We're going to, with your permission, obviously, we're going to move him to sixth grade.
Well, and what does that mean for, like, your friends?
So
you have to make new friends?
I have to make new friends. It wasn't that hard because it was only, like, 20 kids.
Right.
But,
And also, you're just, like, a really cool guy.
Yeah. I get along with people. Yeah. So, I always hung with older people growing mm-hmm. up anyway. Like,
well, how much older?
Sisters,
how much older? Like 30?
No. Like yeah. Usually, so if I was 10, mm-hmm. I was hanging out with the 14-year-olds.
Okay.
Yeah. And so like
it wasn't just like some guy who.
No.
Was just,
it wasn't Tony.
The OG.
Yeah. It wasn't Antoine that just got home from upstate. You know, it wasn't him. But in some cases it was. But that was a little later in life.
Right.
Shout out to Lackawanna, same prison.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it was that I skipped the fifth grade, and that's how I started high school when I was 13, and I actually started college when I was 16.
So did you feel advanced?
I did. I was a very arrogant kid.
Okay.
So I like knew I was smarter than everybody else. So I would like I'd badger people like, oh my god, you studied?
Right.
Like, what a little loser.
Yeah.
You like, were an asshole.
Yeah, I was. I was. You were.
Yeah. Are you still going up to kids and being like, oh, you studied?
No, now I'm going up to my nephews like, man, you got to study, man. Yeah, stay on top of that shit. Yeah. Because I hit the culture shock when I got to high school.
Now you're the old guy that they hang out with.
Yeah, exactly. Like my nephews think I'm like the coolest guy on the planet.
Well, you don't tell them any different, right?
No. I just let them check my Instagram. Yeah.
See how washed you are. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Like, oh my god, how many pictures are you going to take in a turtleneck?
So you go through middle school, high school. Is it all the same school?
No. So the middle school. So I spent essentially fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade in the Christian school, and then my mom decided we should give this public school thing a try again because she was tired of paying tuition.
Came back.
Yeah. And so now I'm back in, but I'm in like the number one public school in the Western New York area. And football, basketball program, very high academics. I mean, it was a technical high school.
Okay.
So I went there to be an architectural engineer.
Whoa.
Because my mother is an electrical engineer.
What are you like as a kid? Are you breaking stuff down? Do you have that like aptitude?
I was very numbers guy. Like I was a math guy from my youth. And so to me, like I felt like if I could break something down in a numerical way, it would always make sense. Like to mm-hmm. me, numbers always made sense. Like history didn't make a lot of sense to me because I felt like it was someone telling a story. You know, science definitely made no sense to me because like, this is all fucking theory.
Mm-hmm.
Math, 2 + 2 = 4 since I was a child. You know, theories change and things of that nature. But I felt like math just always made sense. So for me, I was always able to kind of look at numbers a little differently. And naturally, that was what every other kid struggled with. So
right.
if you were good at math, you were just considered smart off the top.
Like, yeah.
If you couldn't write a sentence, it's cool. Like,
yeah.
This kid knows equations. So right. That was me, essentially my entire youth. So they were like, naturally, you should be an engineer. And I'm like, yeah, totally. Like angles, all that shit.
And you were used to not seeing any girls. So like,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, you know, like, what's another like 30 years without a woman in my life? Like, I got scales. What are you talking about? So that was very interesting. And I liked it in high school a lot. because, you know, it was hands-on. We got to build shit. Like, I built a hotel. It was like a project. It was really dope.
What do you mean you built a hotel?
Well, it was like a
CAD
model
system
size.
And all that.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. So when we, I think my junior year, and I was a football player, pretty good.
What position did you play?
I played safety and running back.
Okay.
And
what number were you?
I wore two numbers in high school. I wore number 26 and I wore number 31.
Because you loved math so much.
Did they give you those numbers?
Yeah. Like, my coach was a dick. So, like, we all were like, yo, you know, it's like, we were a pretty good team. We won the city championship.
Who were you guys?
The Hutch Tech Engineers.
The Hutch, well.
Oh, well. Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah.
The Hutch Tech Engineers.
Yeah, so it was like a bunch of mathematician kids.
Well, who were the?
Did you put up any numbers?
Who was the rival high school?
The rival high school for us. It was different in two sports. So in basketball, it was a high school called Traditional High School, and they just would kick our ass every year. But we were always the second best team, but like by a lot.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was just like they had like, for instance, they had kids. Who they have at that time? That
by the way, if they were smart, they would have been like kicking ass as a tradition.
Yeah, exactly. Kids weren't that advanced. Yeah, it's public school.
Right. Eric, but you should go work on that high school's brand.
I will.
There's money in that. So there was a traditional high school in basketball, and in football, our rival was McKinley. Obviously named after William McKinley, the president
who died in a. He was assassinated.
Yeah. So they had a high school named McKinley, a high school named Grover Cleveland.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Because they come back to us.
So, exactly. Did you have pep rallies?
Yeah, we had all that shit.
Every Friday night, like pep rallies?
Every Friday.
Or did like the marching band walk through school or whatever?
No, we didn't have a marching band. We were engineers.
Did you have a pep band?
We had a pep band.
Okay.
So we had like these two really fat guys who played drums exceptionally well.
Tank?
Tank didn't make it to Hutch Tech. I don't think Tank made it to high school. but we would have like pep rallies, cheerleaders, and all that shit, and they would let a DJ in occasionally.
Oh, cool.
It'd be really dope. It was a big school. So we get like really psyched out for these games. And my sophomore year, my first year of actually playing football, we were really bad.
Oh.
And you know, I didn't play at all. So, you know, I looked great every Saturday.
But that's all that matters.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, I look great. My parents got great photo ops. Like, as I started playing, the pictures, you know, kind of subsided because my father was screaming all the time.
Yeah.
Like, my dad was totally that.
He was into it.
Yeah, like my dad was living vicariously through me because my dad played college basketball.
Oh, whoa.
And then
that's a different sport.
Yeah, it is, but it's still sport. So it's like, sure. And he figured I was probably a little more fit and a little more athletically ready to like take that kind of punishment. So it's like, yo, football is it. And I'm like, word.
Did football give you any structure, by the way?
Yes, it did. Football.
Even though your coach was a dick.
He was a dick, but football actually taught me a lot about like organization, a lot about trust, a lot about team and all that stuff. That's actually where I kind of fostered a lot of my thinking patterns now as far as that goes. It was just like team, like everything. Everyone has a role,
right,
essentially, and all that stuff. And like, you know, don't try to do too much, essentially. Just do your job and everything will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So football did give me that, and basketball to an extent, which was really humbling because I never played in basketball. I made all the teams, but I was bad.
Hold on. So you say your coach is a dick.
Yeah.
But you also say that you don't trust history because you can just make it up and it's just one person's story.
Yeah.
So the question is,
was my coach a dick?
Yeah. Was your coach a dick? Or is this revisionist history?
I think if you polled our team, because we were the only team in the from 2000, literally like 2000 and I think like 14 to actually win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a pretty diverse team. Like, I was a captain. There was this really mucky Italian guy named Luis Marrero, who was a captain, smelled the entire season, on and off the field, smelled. And we had a really diverse team of guys, and, like, no one liked the coach. Like, he was – we loved our defensive coach, and, like, guys would run through a wall for him, but our head coach was just, like –
So
dick.
It's not even one of those things where you look back and it's like, oh, I get why he's a dick.
No.
He was just
it was
a
still
dick.
Like, it was like he was a dick. And so I understood certain methodology and things, but – overall, I was like, he's an asshole. Like, and I get it. Like, there are just people who are assholes in the world. And
yeah, you're talking to two of them right now.
Yeah, no, 100%.
So you get to the end of your high school career.
Mm-hmm.
You have this engineering focus.
Mm-hmm.
Are you like, the rest of my life is going to be engineering?
I was actually like on the fence about engineering at that time because I felt like I'm I was starting to look into like salaries that engineers make, and which was obviously appealing, but I'm like, that's a lot of fucking work.
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe this football thing can be something. Oh. So I had a couple of scholarship offers, a couple of Division I offers, and my mom was handling all of my paperwork at the time. So major was like in the back of my mind. Football program was in the front of my mind. So an offer from Syracuse.
Whoa, hey.
West Virginia. Central Central Michigan, a couple other schools, no real sexy D1 programs, like Miami wasn't knocking at my door, but I had some offers.
The West Virginia was good.
They were good at that. They were just getting good at that time.
Gotcha. Did you make like visits to each campus? Did you consider anyone seriously?
I visited Syracuse.
As you should have,
because it was close by.
Yeah, it was 2 hours.
Hit I-90 and go
exactly.
East. Yeah.
I'm very familiar with Nottingham Road and all that stuff.
Salt City.
Exactly.
Yeah, Tank went there.
I know, yeah.
That's actually where Tank ended up.
Is it really?
No. Nah. I went to SUNY Oneonta.
But
Stoneyonta.
But you saw this as a realistic possibility.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know, if I work hard enough, and I was much more interested in working hard in sports than in the classroom. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, if I work hard enough, you know, I'll make it or whatever. So, long story short.
Yeah, when did your spirit get crushed?
My paperwork got fucked up.
Ah, thanks, Mom.
Legit. So I didn't speak to my mom for like a summer.
Oh, my God.
Then I actually spent half of that summer here with my uncle, kind of like getting ready and, I'm going to go to D1 school.
Your uncle lives around here still?
Yeah. Okay. I still have a ton of family that lives in the city. So, mm-hmm. I was as a kid, I would spend summertime here. So I never really lost touch with what New York was. But then my mom was basically, like, she jacked up my paperwork. So it was around my birthday, which is late July.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm under the impression I'm going to school. So I'm like, what do I pack? How many pairs of sneakers do I take? Like, what do kids in college normally dress like? All that shit. The important stuff.
Trash.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I wish I had known that. Man. Wasted so many
good bow ties, slacks. And
exactly. Yeah. Nah, man, sweats. So so then she messes up my paperwork. I hate saying that because it's my mom, but messes up my paperwork. And I go on this downward spiral and end up at Buffalo State playing football and studying architecture.
So you get there, you're playing football.
Yep. I'm playing football and skipping class.
Okay.
And
that's what you go to school for, right?
It's college.
Well, same, yeah.
Yeah. But I get there and it's like a culture shock to me because I think I'm walking into this school that literally I went to high school blocks down from. So it can't be that much different. Completely different. Every single person I met was from Brooklyn. Within my summer orientation and stuff. Every kid on the football team was from Brooklyn. They all played for Canarsie High School. So I'm playing football. I'm doing all the college shit, drinking on Tuesdays and things of that nature. And it was fun. And it was so fun that I stopped going to class altogether my freshman year. And at that point I didn't know the consequence of
Well, isn't there an advisor or somebody to be like, you are a student athlete.
Yes.
You're supposed to do athletics. And
100%.
Yeah, and, but 100%. If we've learned anything from education. This podcast so far, Cam has a problem with authority. Yes. So even if somebody was coming through.
That's the consistent thing. It's worked out for me later in life. But that was the consistent
thing. Right.
I'll get to it.
Yeah.
And so luckily at the time, I did just enough to maintain a GPA to stay on the team, which was the only thing that really mattered to me.
And so a light 2-3?
Literally like a 2-3-1.
Yeah.
A 2-3-1. Like a 2-3-1. And my coach is like, all right. So then my sophomore year comes, and we're in our third game of the season, and I'm returning a punt. And I tear my MCL.
Oh.
Punt return. And
what did you do?
To tear it?
Yeah.
I just planted it wrong. So as I'm going to catch the ball, I knew it was done as soon as I caught the ball and I fell.
Oh no.
And it was over. I thought it was my ACL. I went to the specialist and I'm like, yeah, it's your MCL. Rehab is 6 to 8 months. And I'm like, oh, that blows.
Yeah.
But
that requires a surgery.
Surgery. Mm-hmm. And then our rehab, physical therapy, all that good stuff. So I did the surgery, started physical therapy.
You're on crutches for?
I'm on crutches for 2 months.
Okay.
Which was longer than you're supposed to be. But I was on crutches for 2 months because it didn't heal properly.
Oh.
So pretty devastating as in I was only 18 because I was 17 my freshman year. So I was only 18. I had a girlfriend at the time. And so it was like really stressful on her between like, you know, cooking, you know, fried chicken and rice meals at night, going to class, and then taking care of her crippled boyfriend.
Well, did you abuse the privilege?
100%.
Yeah, did you like ring a bell or something?
No. I wasn't full form asshole. But no, I would literally just be like, you know, oh my God, this hurts so much. And
yeah.
Like, she's like, oh, what do you need? I was like, you know, some grape juice would be nice.
Yeah.
Grape juice heals knees.
Yeah, that's, listen,
we all know science.
None of us are doctors here. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, so, but,
well, but in that moment, did you think, or actually through those 8 months, did you think like everything that the majority of my life has been focused on was just one like, you know, planted cleat,
yeah,
and gone.
100%. That was my first time really dealing with my world crashing at once. And
you're so young.
Yeah, I'm 18, and like I you don't realize how fragile your mindset is as that age, because you know you think you got it all figured out. You think you're this super smart, ambitious, I can do whatever the fuck I want, kid. And then you realize that, you know, you don't control much.
By the way, if you look back at your 18-year-old self now, like, wouldn't you be like, you're an idiot? Like, you...
Absolutely.
You have no...
Eric, he skipped 2 grades.
No, I absolutely would. I think the 18-year-old version of me was really brash, really quick temper, which, you know, I actually went to therapy for. We can talk about that too. But really quick temper, thought I knew it all, questioned everything, but questioned everything kind of in a very disrespectful way. And yeah, I think that was my first real introduction to the real world. Because through then, I mean, being even suspensions and all, I coasted through life. Like everything, like I didn't study in high school. I ended up with like a 93 average. Like I was an A student my whole life, not doing anything. So it was like, this was the first time of like, I'd say real personal adversity for myself. And I think that was kind of the start of me kind of transforming. And like sports was done.
And well, so what then?
So that was a very interesting year for me. This is actually 2003,
mm-hmm.
2003, 2004. So I'm rehabbing just to be able to walk again like a normal human being. And not because I essentially like 3 months and I was like, I'm not playing football ever again.
Is one leg like a lot bigger than the other?
Yes. So it is my right leg. And it's so the knee, it's still like, it's still swollen. Well, not swollen. It's inflamed, I guess, at this point, because it's still like this. And, you can see the scars on it. It's really ugly. But it's a constant reminder, I think, for me. It's kind of almost like a timestamp of like when things started to change for
me. Can you tell when the weather's going to change? Are you like, storm's coming?
Yes, I can. I literally predicted, right after inauguration, that there would be no sun for 7 days.
Well, listen, that was more political.
It was in tune, body and mind. But no.
Knee hurt regardless?
There's some days it doesn't. There's some days where I can, like, jump and run and, like, you know, get up from a couch without having to dig down. And,
man.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So,
yeah.
So what's your mindset like then?
Then it's kind of like back to the drawing board. Like, what am I going to do with my life? Essentially, like, I'm in college, so I have a means for something, but like, what am I going to do with my life? And I met this guy, his name was Ray, and he used to throw parties. He had a group called Fast Life Entertainment. And this is actually how I met Della.
Yep.
My best
Shout
friend.
To Della.
Yeah.
Our best friend.
Yeah. Everyone's best friend. Yeah. I feel like these days he's so fucking positive.
But he went to UB, right?
Yeah. He went to University of Buffalo. So, which was 10 minutes from us. So,
right.
I met Della actually like passing out flyers in our student union. So, Ray has this group and he's like, yo, you know, we're looking for guys at Buff State to like help us out with like promotion, whatever. I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's like, it's an easy way to talk to girls. Like, yeah, I'll do it. So I'm like sliding flyers under dorm rooms, like meeting chicks in the lobby, talking about the party that I,
what kind
I'm
of
promoting.
Had you been to any of these parties?
Yes. He at that time they were throwing the premier parties.
So what's it like?
Surprisingly for Buffalo, it's turned up.
But
it's,
like in a is it a house?
So
party,
some
or?
Of them are some of them are like house parties. Some of them are clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time Buffalo had a lot of clubs, so it'd be like nightclubs downtown. Or nightclubs in like Niagara Falls, and he would throw like the biggest party. So like first party of the year, last party of the year, the fashion show after party, the concert after party, and like he had that on Smash. So it's like, okay, like if I'm gonna work with or for someone, I might as well learn from who's doing it at a high level. So I learned under him and another guy named Bart Williams. He actually taught me the business side of parties, which I'm forever grateful to him for. I was running a club door at the age of 19 and had no idea what I was doing. Like,
how old did they think you were?
They thought I was probably 21, but the funny thing, the guy Bart was like the GM of the spot. So he's like, "Yo, I need a doorman." I was like, well, "What does it pay?" He was like, $100 a night. I was like, "Yeah."
So cool. What are you doing? You're so choosing who comes in?
I'm choosing who comes in. I'm enforcing the dress code,
quote unquote.
Yeah. Like I'm enforcing. Which I mean, in Buffalo, how liberal can you be with a dress code?
No boots, no bottoms. Yeah.
No Carhartt.
Grown and sexy. And I'm a 19-year-old who knows what grown and sexy is. Right. Yeah.
You know, bodycon dresses.
And no camo.
No camo. No guns tonight. So I was doing that, and it kind of just taught me how a club works and how parties work at a very young age. So it piqued my interest, and I'm like, you know, I can take a crack at this party thing. I know enough people. I think I can throw a house party at least. So I threw my very first house party when I was 20.
Okay. Yeah, at your house?
No. Yeah. at my fraternity brother's house. He was a grown man with like multiple properties. So we're like, yo, you're not using this house yet? He's like, no, it's a house party. So we throw a house party. It's full of jungle juice and regrets. And
that's what's on the flyer.
Yeah, right? Legit. And that was my first party.
How was it? Successful?
It was great.
Anything break?
Everything broke. Tables, yeah. Windows. Oh, but it was one of those house parties of like college legend. Like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, like you had to be there kind of thing.
And do people then say like, oh, that was Cam's party?
Yeah. So that was the very first. So at that time, wow, this is really deep in my past. I was called Kappa Cam because I was a member of a Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity. Still am.
So it wasn't just a clever name.
Yeah, no, I didn't come up with that on my own. I was kind of just dubbed that. Like, I was like, yeah, you're Kappa Cam. And my name subsequently begins with a K. So yeah. It was cool. It was great alliteration.
Yeah. Cool so, with a K.
Yeah, exactly. That's where that comes from, by the way. So they're like, yo, this party was super dope. Cam did it. So, and this is around the time when Facebook was like the hottest shit on the planet. And you had to actually be in college to have a Facebook account, which I think they should still have today. But, you know, so we started out. That's when me and Della decided, like, yo, instead of doing all this hand-to-hand promotion, why don't we attack it two different ways? Like, why don't we do the internet where everyone's going? Everyone's on Facebook literally just talking shit on each other's walls. Like, yo, why don't we post the party information there? That way we know they see it and they read it, as opposed to if we give someone a flyer and rip it up, throw it away.
Right.
Like, so that's kind of where social media promotion started.
So I have a question about that. Mm-hmm. With Facebook, mm-hmm. Are you sending an invite to people, like an event invite?
Yeah, it was twofold. So we would send an invite to all our friends to the party. They'd confirm yes, no, whatever. And then we would just post on the wall. So we have like the party language on the wall, location, bus pickup schedule, DJ lineup, cover, and all that stuff. And we post it on people's walls. And then people would copy and paste and post it on other people's walls. And like we built out an actual promotion team. And
so then how seriously did you take the RSVPs?
You would show up at people's houses and be like, I'm coming to pick you up.
No, right? I wasn't that guy.
Well, no, because
collecting people.
Because I wouldn't take it like necessarily as you RSVP'd, right. Yes, you're definitely coming.
Right. I've never done that. Yeah. I've always like, it's like, because I say, yeah, I'm coming somewhere all the time and, like, with no intention of showing up.
No, I'm shocked that you came here today.
Yeah. So like I would look at it and let's say like it's a normal good party there is like 1,000 kids. So we'd have over 3,000 yes we're comings, and you know, a third of those people show up.
That's really good.
Times, yeah. You know? So it would get us excited. Yes, like, oh my God, people are actually interested, or people are having conversation on the wall, mm-hmm. and all that mm-hmm. stuff. So that was kind of a better way to gauge who was really coming. Like, mm-hmm. Girls would like tag their friends. Are you going to this and stuff?
Yeah.
So that was kind of how we kept track of it.
And how'd you find the big DJ to come play your party?
I started, so a lot was cold calling for me. And then the funniest cold call I think I ever had was with Mr. C.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in like 2005.
Okay.
And you know, Mr. C still is a huge deal. And like, I'm like, yo, I want Mr. C for my party.
In Buffalo,
right. And he's like, yeah, man, what's the budget? And I'm like, huh? That was the first time I ever heard that in my life. I'm like, what do you mean, like our budget? And he's like, yeah, like how much can you pay me? And I was like, it's like, and at that point, I had no idea how to negotiate at all. So I was like, we usually pay like 500. He said, yeah, I'll call you back. I was like, okay. So I went to Della and I'm like, yo, what's a reasonable price? He was like, it's like, C's rough. And then so, but Della had relationships through the heavy hitters, through DJ Enough. Mm-hmm.
Even by that point?
Yeah. Like, because Della was kind of like their college rep and like their ambassador for heavy hitters. So like DJ Enough, Cass One, CeeLo, L Boogs, all those guys.
Like, why did you cold call when I could exactly, do this myself?
Exactly. So
don't ruin this. To start with Mr. C, who is like,
at that point, the top of the club DJ food chain. And I'm just like, yeah, that's the guy I want. And he's like, yeah, $500. Yeah, I'll call you back. Yeah. And I'm like, all right. So, you know, lesson learned.
I don't think he could get from the city to Buffalo on $500.
No.
Yeah, gas is expensive.
No, legit. And so, and I didn't even know, I wasn't even thinking like, oh, plane tickets, hotels, things of that. And I'm 20 years old. So I'm like, yo, all right, cool. So Mr. C, we eventually got Mr. C, but that was years later. Mm-hmm. And it was way more than $500.
It was $550.
Yeah, it was way more than $500.
Great negotiation.
Yeah. But I got him down. So I got him down.
Well, so who were some of the guys you did get?
So we got DJ Envy.
Ooh.
I had a party with Cass One.
That's awesome. Cass One's going to be coming out with the podcast. What were your thoughts on DJ Envy when you had him?
He was good. At that time, I felt like DJ Envy was one of the best, if not the best guy on the radio at the time. And I was obviously a fan of all of his mixtapes and things of that nature, which Della used to sell out of his Dodge Neon. And I thought Envy was cool. Envy was super chill. Like, he was just like, yo, I'm happy to be here. Like, whatever. Did his set, got his money, and left. And I just thought, like, I always thought of Envy as a professional. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the guys we've been fortunate to deal with over the years have just been super professional guys. And, like, you know, some take to you more than others. Some, like, you keep relationships with. But for the most part, all those guys, I don't really have a bad story about a DJ. I don't think.
Well, then why are you here?
I might. Give me some time to think. I got to think through the years.
Make some up.
So, yeah. So your parties get popping.
Yes.
And you then are known on campus as the guy.
Right. I am the party guy, which...
Do people try to team up with you?
Yes. I did back then, I did a bunch of, like, collab parties with, like, it'd be the Fashion Students Institute or the African kids.
Well, is the school coming to you?
The school is coming to me, too. Homecoming. Right. The school is coming to me, too. And literally, like, I kind of felt like that's when I made it, when, like, the student union board was like, yo, so what do you have going on this weekend? I'm like, nothing. I can make some shit up. Like, you know, we're doing the big homecoming bash.
And yeah,
homecoming ain't a big deal at Buff State, but still, it was like something that they put money behind. And that's when I smartened up and realized that I could get somebody else to pay for these things.
Yeah,
and because
to that point, it's all out of your pocket.
Yeah, it's all out of my pocket, which was a very small pocket at the time.
$500.
Yeah, look, like I was working. I was working a part time job. I was working dietary in a hospital, so I was like putting the slop on the trays.
Wow,
which was dope.
It was all like bologna and lettuce.
Bologna, lettuce, cold mashed potatoes. Yep. You know, oatmeal for breakfast every day. But no, that was like my part time job. I was making like $11 an hour, so I had some money for a college kid, but it was like, yo, I'm gonna invest $1,500 into this party and hopefully I'll make $3,000.
Right.
And where I was like, oh, if we get somebody else to pay, I can still make $3,000. And that's kind of where my ideas for throwing parties kind of evolved.
Well, when did you start drinking?
When did I start drinking? 21 years old, obviously.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
legal
right.
age.
But 2 years, you know, ahead of time, so you're 19.
Yeah. No, I had my first sip of alcohol when I was 12 years old.
Whoa.
Pretty cool, Cam.
Yeah. I don't want to brag. It was Georgie. my cousins here, they used to throw New Year's parties in an apartment in Harlem. So I would always come down for New Year's Eve and do it here. And my cousin had, like, this crazy New Year's Eve party. These guys are, like, 19, 20 years old, and everybody's like smoking weed and everyone's dancing. I'm like, this is really bugged out. I'm 12 years old and I have no fucking clue what I'm doing here, and I smell like cigarettes. So he was like, yeah, you want a drink? I'm like, drink what? And up until that point, I thought drinking was like the communion wine. And so I'm like, they're like, no, it's vodka. I'm like, sure, I'll have some. And they give me a shot. And I asked my cousin, I'm like, I have to drink the whole thing. He's like, yeah. Like, the whole thing. I was like, okay. So I shoot it. I'm like, wow. that's like the strongest medicine I've ever had.
Right.
Like, it's like Buckley's on steroids. And he's like, yeah, it's alcohol. So I was like, am I drunk? he's like, probably. And then, you know, I was like super loopy the rest of the night. And I was like, yeah, I'm totally good on that alcohol shit. And then I got to college.
Right.
And
wait, so you didn't drink in high school?
No, I didn't drink in high school. I thought kids who drunk in high school were losers. I thought kids who smoked cigarettes in high school were losers. I was like this peak douche athlete guy. Like, I don't put that stuff in my body.
Right. Your body is a temple.
Yeah, my body is a temple. Still is.
But then when your body got wrecked, then
once I realized
got wrecked.
Right. Once the temple came crashing, I was like, fuck it, man.
So are you like, my life goes somewhere else outside of Buffalo for
Yeah, of course. I mean,
you weren't like, I'm going home. No. And
for me, it was always like, I had always picked, like, from the time I would always be here and spend around, like, my life is meant to be lived in New York City.
Yeah.
And the sooner I can get back there, the better. And so I left. I was done with school in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a job through a friend. I actually started working for J.P. Morgan in the spring of 2009.
Numbers.
Yeah. Literally numbers. Mm-hmm. Middle desk trade support stuff, then banking. And I was there for 2 years. And at that point, you could not have told me that I didn't make it. I was wearing a suit to work every day. I had a long trench coat. I had a briefcase.
Where you living?
I'm living in Harlem.
Okay.
I am on 142nd and Lenox at the time.
Okay.
So I'm right in between Cam's block and Votto's block.
Yeah.
And so I knew all those guys.
Yeah.
Clips, Votto, all the MH guys. Great guys. Mills, all those guys.
So your best Votto impression for the people.
You know, Votto's really quiet.
Yeah.
And you know, in person, he's really super chill. He's a jokester though.
Yeah,
he's a funny dude. He's cool though. I met him the same time that I met Charlie Clips, actually, who's a super funny guy.
I mean, as a battle rapper, you sort of have to.
You have to be entertained.
So every morning, what time are you waking up?
I'm up at 7 o'clock.
Right.
Every morning, I'm hopping in my dirty shower.
Okay.
I'm getting dressed. I'm putting on my nice blue Chase shirt. The assortment of ties from Lands End that they give you. you know, if I'm really feeling myself, I'm getting my shoe shined on the way out of the 50th and Broadway station.
Train. Yeah. Oh, you're taking the one then?
Yeah. I would take the three.
It.
Yeah. I take the three down to you guys' block.
Yeah.
And then I take the one to 50th.
And like, how many folks are dressed up as nice as you that early?
Where I started?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's such a
low-key burn.
It's funny. As I'm walking from 142nd to 145th, it's just like, it's a ghost town.
Mm-hmm.
It's the morning time in Harlem. Like, you know. And folks are just looking at me like, oh, this guy's somebody.
He's
a lawyer. Or,
and you believe that. You were like,
yeah,
I did.
Somebody. I was like, yeah, of course I'm somebody. I have a polo trench coat. Yeah. Right? So I'm walking.
Was it USPA?
No, it was polo. Okay. No USPA. That wasn't allowed. My dad had some rules. He had some rules. So I go like to the 145th Street station. And, you know, there'd be kids, obviously, a bunch of kids cursing up a storm at 7 in the morning. And then, you know, older ladies going to work wherever they're going to work. And then, you know, just people riding the train. So as I got closer to 96th Street, you know, everyone looked like me. And then I would always get on the train with this one guy. No idea where he worked. He might have worked for UBS or something like that.
But you got the same schedule.
Yeah, same schedule. See him every day. He missed the train. I missed the train. It was total coincidence.
Yeah, right.
But no, he was always this well put together guy. And I was like, you know, like, is that going to be me in 20 years, like doing the same shit? And I'm like, sounds cool, but I don't really think I want to be this forever. So I worked at Chase for 2 years, and I left.
Are you and Della still close?
Yeah. At this point, me and Della are close. He's working at VH1 at the time. So Della's kind of – that's actually a great point. Della's actually introducing me to this scene at that point, which I had no idea this world even existed, where, you know, shit was free and you guys expected all this shit to be free and it was okay. And like,
yeah, we didn't pay you $500 to come here.
No, I didn't know. I was like, what the fuck? Like, I'm at this point, I'm used to paying for everything unless I know the bouncer or I know, you know,
right.
So I'm like, he's introducing me to this world of, you know, industry, if
you
will.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think at the time, it, like everyone else who's first introduced to it, oh, this is really cool. Like, you guys get to do all these dope events. It's during the week. Like, you get to network. I was like, this is very cool. I don't see me wanting to be a part of this, but this is really dope. And so he would take me to, like, these VH1 parties, like, hip-hop honors, stuff that. So I got to, like, meet a ton of people. And I actually, that's where I met Low Key in 2009.
What a bummer.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I kind of wish that day never happened. And I've been responsible for him ever since. But no, it was really dope. I met Low Key at a birthday party, oddly enough, and his hair was still fucked up.
Well, I'm sorry.
Here we go.
Yeah. But yeah, Della introduced me. I always say that about Della. He introduced me to a ton of people. He essentially introduced me to this world as his friend, and it just gave it a lot of credibility to, like, the folks I was meeting, because everyone loves Della. So.
And he knows everybody.
Yeah, he knows literally everyone.
So what are you doing on weekends? What are you doing on Friday
nights? On weekends,
are you hanging out with your JP Morgan? Like,
no. I tried that a couple of times, because my mom would, like, when I got the job, she's like, you know, work-life balance, you know, be cool with your coworkers, but, you know, don't be too cool with your coworkers and all that. So I'm like, yeah, mom, whatever. Like, I was like, I don't hang with these guys. But we'd go out for, like, drinks occasionally. That's where I discovered happy hour. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. And we would, like, go out, hang out. But, you know, these guys lived in Long Island, Jersey, and I lived in Harlem, so I'm hopping on the, you know, hopping on the A train, they're hopping on the, you know, the Long Island Railroad or whatever the case may be. So weekends, I'm hanging with my friends in the hood. We're chilling, usually brunch somewhere uptown. I spent a lot of time in Dyckman. Mm-hmm. Great place. You know, a lot of sights.
A lot of sights.
So I'm spending my week, but I'm doing the regular party shit, man. I'm hitting M2, I'm hitting Pink Elephant, I'm hitting Home.
Right. So you really were a JP Morgan douchebag.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Minus the coke. Yeah. I couldn't afford that. I was only making 50 grand a year.
You just dressed like you could.
Right. Someone might invite me to the coke table.
But you haven't thrown a party at that point in a couple
here,
years.
Here, no. I hadn't thrown a party here. I was throwing parties here while I was in college, though.
Right.
We were throwing parties in the city when I was in college. But I hadn't thrown a party yet. I was kind of over that world.
Yep.
You know, everything is a burnout business. But I hadn't thrown a party yet until Della presented this idea of throwing something at Opal when Opal was popping on 52nd and 2nd. So we used to do the Friday nights there, and I was like, okay, maybe I can get into, like, the after work mixer game. You know, it's not as stressful as a door and all that stuff for a party, so let me try that. And I tried my hand at that for a little while on the side of my job. It was dope. Made me some good money. More good friends. I met a lot of people in the service industry, which is dope. Really made some really good relationships. And yeah, that kicked off, I want to say, in 2010.
Okay.
For me, and carried into 2011 and 2012. I started working at, no, 2011, I started working at Condé Nast.
Mm-hmm.
And you had one more job, I think, before then? No?
Yes. So this is probably, if I ever, like, wrote a book about my life, this would be the chapter I'd leave out. I was working at the time for Bank of New York Mellon in Wilmington, Delaware, and that was for 7 months.
You moved down there?
I moved to Wilmington, Delaware. And
what is in Wilmington, Delaware besides, like, a Dunkin' Donuts?
Dunkin' Donuts, if you're lucky. Yeah. Wilmington. So I lived around the corner from my job. That's how desolate that fucking place was. So I lived in, like, this super nice apartment complex. First time I ever bought my own furniture. And so, like, there was a complex, then there was this long winding road that would lead to one of those, like, industrial drives where all the businesses are. And so my food options were Chinese food, Domino's, and this mom and pop Italian restaurant that was terrible.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of big Italian community in
yeah,
in
I,
Delaware.
There was no Big Tony. There was no Sal.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I forgot the lady's name. I think her name was Linda. But she was really nice, but the food sucked. But I was like, oh, you know, tonight I want pasta. So that's actually where I learned how to cook, because I would go to the grocery store, which was like 2 miles down the road, and there was no Uber at the time.
I was
walking.
Well, now we're Lyft boys.
Lyft.
Shout out to Lyft.
Lyft. So I'm in Wilmington, Delaware for 7 months. Needless to say, pretty miserable. Seven months.
So it's like the Wayne's World thing where it's like, we're in Delaware.
Yeah. No, legit. I think in the 7 months I was there, I went out in Delaware one time. And it was pretty bad.
And when do you get the idea to have a little party at your apartment where you ask people to bring where you ask people to bring Hennessy?
Yep.
And chicken?
Yep.
And themselves.
So funny, it's actually funny how this whole thing really came about, because prior to Henny Palooza, I had a game night at my house like 3 weeks before that. That was crazy. And like Swister, everyone was drunk as shit. And it was a good time. Like, people were at my house until like 7 in the morning. And I'm like, you know what? I want to do that again.
That was good. Yeah.
And
I want to play Twister some more.
Yeah, I want to play Twister some more. Like, I want to pour Hennessy down women's throats, like playing Uno. Like, that was fun.
Oh, that happened then.
That happened then. So
visionary.
So, yeah. I'm trying to tell you guys. So technically, Henny Palooza was supposed to be a recreation of that game night. But just, you know, a little bigger, because more people went into it.
I don't want
to
jump ahead, but I sort of see where you're going with Henny Palooza. Game night, like Twister coming up.
Yo,
like,
it could have been Twister Palooza.
Yo, legit. It could have been anything else. But, like, my dumbass, at the time, where was I? I was at Condé Nast. I was
You had, like, a real job.
Yeah, I had a real gig. I was, it was a shitty gig, but it was a real gig. I was the... What was my title?
I was the black guy.
Yeah, no, legit, the black straight guy.
It's kind of at Condé Nast.
The black straight guy. Yeah. But yeah, I was doing like media planning and shit. So at that time, I was just like, I was bored. I was like, yo, guys, let's do that game night thing again. But this time we'll theme it. Like, let's bring, you know, chicken or Hennessy. Like, let's really coon this all the way out. And
was that on the flyer?
No. See, the funny thing is, like, you see that invite, like that iPad note? That was the formal invitation. There was another invitation of text message that I just sent to people that I probably can't post on social media.
You screenshotted it and you forwarded it to your friends.
Yeah, so I forwarded it to Lo. I forwarded it to Fox, Chris Fox, Kaz, Della, Jamal, you know, the crew. And
I noticed that Eric and I weren't invited by
true. I don't even think you guys followed me at the time.
Definitely didn't.
I don't think you followed me until like Henny Palooza got popping. But you know, that's another, that's cool. I get it. You gotta
just air it out.
I know. You gotta earn your stripes. But no, so I sent a text to those guys, and like just jokingly, I hashtag it Henny Palooza, like just being funny, or what was funny to me at the time. And you know, a couple days go by, and Low Key hits me. He's like, "Yo, man, have you seen the hashtag on Twitter?" I was like, "The fuck is a hashtag?" I was like, "I thought hashtags were for jokes," because at that time, that's what it was
for Fabulous's Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, "I thought that was for jokes," and he's like, "No, like check the hashtag Henny Palooza." And I go in, and it's like Joe Button, a couple of folks like, "Yo, what is this?" Like, you know, where is it? You know, how much is it? Who do I talk to? I'm like, this is really weird. It's my house. And then so like...
How big is your house, by the way?
I was in a two-bedroom in East Harlem on 115th and Pleasant. I can say that now because I don't live there anymore. But I was on 115th and Pleasant, and it was a huge two-bedroom. So the living room was probably double the size of a regular living room. In the city,
could have had two Twisters.
Yeah, right. There was definitely room for two Twisters, you know, and the big Jenga.
Yeah.
So you know, at that time, I'm like, I'm gonna have all these people in my apartment. I can do a good 20 people in here and be cool. So then, as it started building up, and like people that text me, like Raheem, who was at Atlantic at the time, is like, "Yo, I got a couple folks who want to come through, a couple chicks." I'm like, "Oh, okay," and like, I'm not gonna say no to chicks,
but you're good at math though.
Yeah, exceptional at math. And I'm like, you know what? This ain't gonna work up here.
Yeah.
So, you know, I live in a family owned building, so I go to my landlord and I'm like, "Yo, look, I'm having some people over. It's gonna be pretty loud.
There's a hashtag involved.
Yeah, yes, not sure." And he's like, "How many?" He's like, "How many people you think?" And I said,
4,000.
I was like, you know. Yeah, I always lowball those things. Like, yeah, you know, like 15.
Yeah.
20. He's like, "Okay." He's like, "That means 40. I was like, "Yep." He's like, "So
because everybody brings two girls."
Yeah, that's exactly. Right. He's like, "How about you use the community room downstairs? Like, we do baby showers and stuff."
Now,
I was like, "Yeah, that makes perfect sense." And he's like, "Okay, it's gonna cost you." I'm like, "Okay, how much?" He's like, "Hold on, let me go." So he goes into his records. He's like, "Yeah, $25. Okay.
You should have negotiated. Like, drive like, a hard bargain.
I was like, yo, man, I got 15.
Yeah, yeah.
I was
yeah.
like, I got a strong 15 on this.
I got to get Mr. C up here.
Yo, listen, man, how am I going to afford? Yeah. So, you know, I got a budget.
Yeah.
So he makes me sign this contract.
A contract?
I signed a contract.
For $25?
For $25, which didn't include cleaning. So I had to clean, which it was a ripoff in hindsight. But so I get the contract, I sign it. So the very first Henny Palooza was at a registered venue.
Wow.
It was just 279 Pleasant Corporation.
Wow.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm sure you use that going forward. Just 100%. Like, oh yeah, no, first one was
yeah, 100%. It was an alleged venue. Yeah. Oh,
Uptown?
I can tell you guys the story about the second one. This is probably the best Henny Palooza story for me personally, because I completely lied my ass off to the guy. So he, the second one was at an art gallery in the Lower East Side. And we were originally supposed to do it at the A-Loft in Brooklyn. They found out what the concept was, and I'm like, fuck no, can't do that here, whatever.
They were like, wait, there's a concept?
Yeah, they were like, wait, open bar Hennessy? Like, no. So
so you take that as a way that you're like, oh, I have to pitch it differently.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, so I put my sales cap on. Yeah. I'm like, okay, let me go fish some venues. So I go on this website that like does event lists.
By the way, fish is a term for scamming.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
True indeed.
Yeah.
So I call up this guy. He's like, yeah, come down to the place or whatever. You can come see it. I'm like, cool. So I walk in a nice navy blue suit. Good time.
Cameron.
Yeah.
Not Cameron. Kappa Cam.
Cameron from Condé Nast.
Yeah.
So, Condé Nast with the cat.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. That's right.
So I walk in and I'm like, hey, how you doing? You know, we spoke on the phone. He's like, yeah, so, like, what are you thinking about doing? I was like, just a small cocktail party. You know, it's going to be, like, past hors d'oeuvres.
Not untrue.
Yeah. Music lightly being played in the background.
Well, that's an exaggeration, right?
And he's like, yeah. And I was like, honestly, I think this space is perfect for it. The guy's like, you think so? I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah. So he's like, yeah, you know, I'm Condé Nast, work with GQ, Traveler, all those magazines. You know, we have some big clients in the house. So, blah, blah, blah. So he's like, all right, cool. Yeah, so I was like, I saw the rental on the site. Like, what's your actual rental fee? And he's like, well, we're technically not open yet. We do our grand opening on Sunday, and we were on the Saturday. So I was like, oh, this is perfect. I was like, yeah, you'll get all the right eyes on this thing. You know, there'll be media there. The source.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have all these great influencers in there, low key.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll be a thing. So he's like, dope. So we come in there on the Saturday. You know, I meet him. I'm still giving the whole bullshit smooths over. And the first time his eyes got really big were when the speakers came in. And he's like, I was like, oh, it's fine. We won't turn them all the way up. Like, it won't fuck with the paintings at all. And then, you know, the setup, music setup, whatever. The bar, the makeshift bar is set up. And there's like some Hennessy to start. And then people are starting to line up. And they're lining up with boxes of like Popeyes. And
because the admission is still
chicken or Hennessy. Right. And so people are like lined up with bags of Popeyes, and I just see it on his face, and he's like, "What the fuck is this?" And at that point, I was like, "All right, this is going to be probably my best bullshit job of all time to even make sure this thing goes to the time." So throughout the night, like paintings are falling.
Oh my god!
The place is all white. Obviously, it's an art gallery, so the walls are blue and brown.
Oh my god!
People are falling on the floor. Hennessy puddles. It was amazing.
Did you still have to clean up everything?
So me, you know, being the visionary that that's right. I am, party's ending. I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, this thing has to end in 20 minutes. I was like, cool. No doubt. I was like, guys, wrap it up in 20. I assigned like four people. Like, yo, clean this shit up. Like, where are you going? I said, I'm going home. Like, this guy has my cash. There's no contract on the books. Like, I'm just going to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
As I'm leaving, we had Uber now at this time. So as I'm leaving, I'm getting in the car to go back uptown, and I hear the guy calling me. He's like, yeah, I'll be right back. Jump in the Uber, take off home. And a part of me felt bad.
Which part was that? The MCL?
Yeah. There was a very small piece of me that was like, damn, that was fucked up. I was like, that guy has to open that place in like 12 hours. But, you know, fuck, he's got my money. Like, and then I went home, and we rode by the next morning because he was, like, cleaning trash and shit. And this guy, the poor guy, I don't think he slept. He had no shirt on, and he's, like, repainting his walls for the opening.
Oh, no.
And I was like, yeah, we did that.
Oh, and sure did.
And God forbid, like, some girl, like, lost her phone there, so she had to go back the next day and remind the poor guy, like, yo, we just did some fuck shit here last night.
Right.
Where's my phone?
This is still ongoing.
Yeah, and he's like, fuck. And he's like, cursing her out. Like, yeah, this motherfucker, Cam. And, yeah, it was great. So, yeah. Penny Palooza was a lot of finessing early on.
Okay, let's talk about the team right now.
Yes.
Let's go over everybody and see what position they play.
Okay.
You are...
You guys just want to know if Dwayne has a real job.
Yes.
Truth comes to light.
Here we go. So, you got you. And what do you handle on game day?
On game day, for me, it's the boring shit. Like, making sure that the door people are good. Making sure that everyone... Like, I do the security meeting. I do... I make sure all the bars are properly stocked with enough Hennessy, which is never enough. I make sure sound check is good with the DJ. So I'm doing like all the pre stuff, DJ sound check, make sure the green rooms are good. You know, double checking with Kaz to see if we have special guests coming through. How are we filtering that kind of stuff? And then during the event, it's pretty simple for me. I'm just checking on everybody, like making sure everything's good, making sure everything's running smoothly, kind of running in between all the floors and stuff, and drinking Hennessy.
Benner
is the head of operations. Me and Benner are partners in the business. Benner does all venue bookings. He does a lot of the talent outreach as well. Day of, like all that stuff I just said I do, Benner is on top of that stuff from opening to close. Benner likes to drink Miller Lite during Henny Palooza.
Oh, that's
loud. Are other drinks?
Yeah, we serve other alcohol. It's just not free. It's just not free. You got to pay a premium for Georgie.
So, Kaz.
Kaz is basically our talent guy. So we gave him a really like souped up bullshit title, but Kaz is the guy who plugs us with artists, and like he's like our go between for most of the talent.
Rory
is our GM, if there is a such thing, for a party.
Is every single one going to come with a qualifier?
Yeah, no, like, this is
all made up title.
Yeah, this is LinkedIn.
You gotta
have a title. Like,
yeah. But Rory also does like the doors.
Yes, Rory does the door. He'll do guest list at times. He also does a lot of our socials.
Okay,
he does a lot of our socials.
Lowkey and Chris Styles.
They are our voices. They are our hosts. Low is obviously our OG host, because he'll literally host anything. And back then, we would always joke he'll host anything for free. So, you know, Low saved me a lot of money in the early days. I think I'm getting taxed for it now. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Low's our OG host. Chris, I've known Chris since he was in college, mm-hmm. since he was a kid. Chris is our other host. He's like the energy. I feel like Chris is kind of like the heart and soul of Henny Palooza. Like, Chris has the ability to get everybody, like, excited about this thing and, like, keeps everybody, like, energized. So, yeah, Chris and Low, they're our hosts. Without them, the party probably isn't nearly as good.
Raven,
if your answer is not she's the only female, then
I think you have to start with that.
Yeah, right.
Because she reminds us of that daily. She's the only female, but Raven's
she gets her own room in the hotel.
She gets her own room.
Yeah,
she gets her own room. She's our content girl. I mean, photos. Mm-hmm. She does all of the Instagram stuff. She does our socials. When I'm not usually tweeting from the Henny Palooza account, it's her. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's really like, I guess, yeah, our only female.
Fleisch.
Young Fleisch God. Yeah. Jess is amazing, man. Jess is our video guy / drug connect on the road, you know. But no, Jess is amazing, man. He just adds another element with the video thing side of things, and he's probably, you know, the hardest working guy I know, as far as like when we're all like, we all say we're working for 5 hours. Justin is working for 5 hours.
He's powerful.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Powerful. Yeah. Like, everything's a power move.
Comfortable shoes are not really comfortable for that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's just on his feet.
The whole time.
Austin Mills.
He's our guy. He's our DJ. Austin's DJing career essentially started at Henny Palooza. And, you know, as he's grown, so is the brand. And, like, it's kind of really cool to see how synonymous those two things are. Like, the bigger his star is shining, excuse me, the brighter his star is shining, so is HP. He's coasting at this point. He has the easiest job.
All right, now let's really get into it.
Oh, wait, oh. We need to get to Dwayne.
Oh, Dwayne!
How do you skip Dwayne? Dwayne is...
Chicago's own.
Dwayne is Chicago's own, the two-stepping king who wears Green Bay Packers jackets. But Dwayne is, he's a utility guy, man. We found a role for him now on the road to where Dwayne does our door. And Dwayne just has a very good eye at, like, spotting shit out, especially the jig, usually because he's a part of it.
But, Dwayne's going to let everybody in.
Legit. Like, he's letting them all through. Yeah.
And Peege.
Yeah, and Peege.
I was going to say Peege.
Peege is actually rounded out our quota. For Caucasians, for Caucasians, until Raven doesn't count, she's half white.
So, Justin Fleischer,
Justin Fleisch, Rory.
But yeah.
We have to stay the majority in this thing.
Sure.
So you know, Peege was kind of like, that was it for me. I gotta stop letting Benner make personnel decisions.
Peege does two things, right?
Peege does two things.
He does the artwork.
Yes.
And he does an awful Millie Rock.
Yes. Yeah. His dancing is terrible, but he's surprisingly better than Della at Millie Rocking.
I have seen video of Della.
It's pretty bad.
Pretty bad. I will say, all nice people.
Yeah, all nice people.
Isn't it so much better to work with people you like and are like decent people than the opposite?
It is.
Yeah, tell me about that.
I consider myself very lucky. I think that this, like, because people think this thing was like a huge master plan of mine. It came together, I think, naturally.
I don't think anyone thinks this is a huge master plan.
No,
of yours.
People do. I mean, you know, to certain people, this is like, you know, this is like Apple. This is like the Apple of parties to, like, you know, the hood. But they think like it's this big
Apple
Sriracha
parties. Yeah. Hey, that was pretty good.
Or the Apple 10 of parties. Yeah. But no, it's dope just to work with people, you know, that are friends. I think it's. To me, it's easier because the transparency is always there as friends, and I think transparency is key in business. Mm-hmm. And it's easy for me to say, hey, I can't pay you today, but I can pay you on Tuesday. But, you know, this is what's happening, kind of thing. And people respect it,
right?
Because, you know, there's just like a mutual kind of trust and respect there, which I think that you sometimes can miss if you're working with people.
So, about the copycats,
yeah,
out there. What's the first one you found, and what are the, like, the considerable ones that you found?
I don't know if I call them copycats. I think everyone's aspiring.
Okay.
So I think it's like anything else. You see a good idea, and you know, you take bits and pieces of it and you add your own spin to it, and it becomes a completely different good idea. I've seen some similar ones. The first one I ever noticed was Patron Fest.
Mm-hmm. Patron Fest.
Yeah. And it's similar in principle, just a different alcohol.
I get it. Yeah. It took me until you saying that. Now I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a similar.
They don't have Twister.
No. Yeah, right. There's no Jenga there.
Yeah. But do you think that these copycats, what they don't have, what the element they don't have is you guys?
I'm a firm believer that the people make the experience. So I feel like with us, if you took away the Hennessy, you know, if it was in a different venue or things of that nature, it would still be a good party just because of the people that are throwing it. I feel like you can see something, you can see this thing, and you take one thing from, like, yo, that's what makes this thing pop. Mm-hmm. If I was to say that about this, it would be the people. I don't think it's the liquor. I don't think it's, you know, the liquor helps, but I don't think, like, oh my God, I'm going for the free. No, I'm going because it's a good party and there's free Hennessy. So I think that, yeah, the team absolutely, absolutely makes the people want to come to this thing and makes for the experience. And I think that's why we're able to now be in our fifth year doing 20 cities.
And an island.
It's U.S. property, but, yeah, you know, it's still an island.
Whatever happened with Hennessy, why didn't they partner up with you guys?
That is a great question. One that I still don't have the full answer to, but I think it was just a matter of timing, one, and two, it's just a little off base from what their brand messaging is.
Yeah, is there a liability thing for
that? They would say that it is. I don't think there is, because, you know, for all the chaos and all the craziness you hear about it, we don't have fights. We don't have people. Normally, we've had a couple with, like, EMT from, like, you know, drinking too much in the sun or something like that, but we don't have a bunch of people throwing up and, like, overconsumption. It's not a sloppy party. It's a good time, and I feel like so we're covered on the liability side. Mm-hmm. We carry our own insurance. Right. We've trademarked everything.
You also have, like, a million people working for you, so you can handle all of your
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's a real, like, it's a legitimate privately ran business. And I feel like with them, it kind of got to the point where we were already this thing. And it's like, we're not going to latch on to this thing that's already kind of going. And, well, you know, it's also kind of a thing, well, we didn't come up with that, so we're not going to do that.
Has the group, what was the name of the group who did Swag Surfing?
FLY.
Yes. FLY. Mm-hmm. Have those guys ever reached out to say thank you?
Yo, yes.
Because Henny Palooza has, and look, low-key.
Yeah.
Have taken that and given it the a Swag whole Surf. Second
life. Legit. I don't think that a lot of people know what FLY is. So they are the group behind Swag Surf, but you guys have brought it into a very new light.
Yeah, they are...
made it like the party song for Henny Palooza.
Which, while it is the staple of Henny Palooza, like, it's gone beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a Swag Surf on the
on the White House lawn. White House. Yeah. It's...
In 2016. Like, right.
I think it's one of those things, not to like really pigeonhole it, but it's one of those things in like hip hop culture, black culture, where you have these certain songs that like they unify people, whether it be through the lyrics or through like, you know, the dancing or whatever the case may be. There's like these staple songs like Before I Let Go, like, you know, so like these songs that like every person in there is on one accord. Swag Surfing is one of those records, and I feel like, not to give it too much significance, but it is a unifying moment. It's like, yo, the world's really fucked up right now. The least we could do is hold each other's arms together for 5 minutes in a party while we're drunk and have a good time. And that's memorable, you know? Oh, shit, balloons dropped while we did that. That's a memorable thing. And I think low-key, him going to an HBCU, just having such a passion for that record, he made sure that record was played at every single Henny Palooza, to the point where, like, the next day, oh, my God, Swag Surf was so crazy. And, you know, everyone's at and low-key, like, it's his song. Mm-hmm. And then... FLY, I actually met them at A3C this year.
Whoa.
They came to the Henny Palooza after party and performed Swag Surfing.
Whoa.
And I got to talk to him in the green room for like 10 minutes. And I'm like, yo, you know, my boy Low Key, like, he loves this record. He champions it. Like, yeah, we know who Low Key is. Like, yo, make sure you tell him we said thanks. And then they sent us like a big shout out on Twitter. And, you
know, amazing.
And it was dope. Like, for me, it was like that stuff like that to me is like just as cool as like Wale coming through in DC. Like, that shit is just cool to me because it's connecting culture. And like, I felt like that was one of the bigger moments, and like Low Key got to like get his shout out from the guys who made his favorite song.
Hmm. Yeah, who else has come through? Like,
Wale's come through, Pusha T has come through,
Joe Budden,
Joe's come through,
Young MA,
Dave East, Nipsey Hussle.
You're forgetting a lot. There's Atlanta people.
There's been so many. Drama. Mike Will,
yeah.
21 Savage, right before he blew up.
Wow. Was 21 Savage fun at the party?
He didn't move.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't
move. That's to be expected. Yeah.
He didn't move. I was like, who is that? He was like, oh, that's 21 Savage. I was like, okay, awesome.
You can recognize him by the giant cross in his...
Legit. I was, that's what kind of like I saw.
And the dead look in his eyes.
Yeah, I was like, this guy's a riot.
Yeah. This guy's jokes.
Yeah, this guy's
He's
a riot.
He's ready for Tuesday. Low Key brought his parents to, was it the 5-year anniversary?
4-year anniversary.
4-year anniversary.
Yep.
Henny Palooza. And it's pretty wild,
like, yeah,
to have that cosign.
Yeah.
Have you invited your family?
I have not.
Okay. Yeah, when is Henny Palooza going to Buffalo?
Never. Well, it's
Has upstate, central, or western New York reached out to you?
100 times.
Yeah.
100 times. The closest we'll probably get is Toronto. Just, I mean, not for nothing. It's still a very segregated place. And too, it can be a pretty violent place as well. So, you know, like, they're still like fighting if you like bump their girl by accident, mm-hmm, up there, things of that nature, stepping on people's shoes. So I don't think just yet, mm-hmm, they're ready for HP, mm-hmm, but my parents love it, mm-hmm, because, you know, I don't have to ask them for money, mm-hmm, and my dad thinks it's the dopest shit ever because, mm-hmm, my dad's a former musician, like, he's
living vicariously through.
Yeah, my dad is like, yo, this shit is really cool, like, he sees like the crowd, he's like, this is dope. My mom's like, oh, it's nice, like, so Is this stopping you from getting married?
Well, yes. Have they seen Chris Stiles' videos?
They have. Funny story. The first time my parents met Chris Stiles, we were downtown at some luncheon or something, some open bar shit that Dwayne invited us to. And
that's what Dwayne does.
Yeah, I was like, yo, I'm gonna bring my parents through, whatever. And they're like chilling. My mom's like drinking a mojito or some shit. And Chris walks in like this red sweatsuit. And his chains out.
Yeah, yeah.
And my dad, just being the guy he is, he's like, oh, that's like, a kid's from Brooklyn, isn't he? It's like, I'm like, yeah, he's from Brooklyn. And then my mom's like, oh. And then he meets my parents, like, oh my God, you know, I heard so much about you. He puts the act on. You know, Chris is a very charismatic kid.
Yeah.
So my mom's like, he must be the host. Said, yeah, what other job could I give him? And so they see all his videos. I send them all like the videos and stuff. Not the dancing ones with the strippers. I don't send them the viral ones. All the Millie Rock ones though they get.
Sure.
Though.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but they've seen all the recaps, which they love. My mother just has a problem with the cursing and the songs.
Sure.
But,
sure. Yeah.
But she loves the recap.
She's
videos.
Like, you're not playing any Mary Mary.
No. She's know? Like she's like, I just don't understand why you have to use the unedited version. And I'm like, well, mom, because you're not my demo. Like my demo identifies. Like,
can you do a Henny Palooza for your mom's crowd?
I could.
That's how you sold it to people, you know, like the art gallery.
Yeah, I could. I, at this point, I think I could sell almost anything. I think to her crowd, though, it'd have to be. Have to be Pino Palooza.
Mm-hmm. Pino Palooza.
It have to be Pino Palooza. Mm-hmm.
Pino Fest.
Yeah, yeah, Pino Fest. Exactly. Or if they want to get really crazy, we'll do like Rum Palooza because that's when my parents are really crazy.
Yeah.
When they're drinking Bacardi.
So I don't want to jump too far ahead in terms of like where Henny Palooza goes because you did just announce a 20 city tour.
Yeah.
But how big could it go?
Space.
I think, honestly, I don't know.
Okay.
I think I'm of the mindset that for something like this, the sky's the limit. And I think that it is something that you constantly reevaluating as it grows. I never thought we'd do Webster Hall. And now Webster Hall is almost too small for us, you know. So we're doing Coney Island, and I never thought we could do 5,000 people. We're doing 5,000. Who's to say we can't do 10,000? Who's to say we can't do 15, 20? And who's to say we can't do it 2 days in a row, you know? Who's to say we can't be wireless or one of those things? So I think for us, it's just it's staying true to what we do, you know, making necessary adjustments, like, you know, doing smarter things. But I don't know where this thing can go. I honestly thought it was only going to last like 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, mainly because of me. I was like, I'll probably get tired of this thing after like 2 years.
Well, you get tired of it? Because like it's basically the same people. Mm-hmm. Like you're seeing the same people. Mm-hmm. Like because you're not going out in the crowd and being
right.
Like, oh my God, it's Amanda who I just met.
Right.
From,
I do know. Do that.
Well, yes,
I do walkthroughs. Oh. I do walkthroughs.
I'm sure you are meeting Amanda.
Yeah, I've met a couple of Amandas. I've met a couple of Amandas.
But I mean, but for all intents and purposes, you are partying with the same people.
Yes.
You know, 20 times a year,
yes.
And doing the same thing, swag surf, all that stuff.
Yes.
Does it get tiresome at all for you?
Yes, it does. But I think the cool part about it is that I don't ever get like sick of it. I get tired, like, oh my God, like another show,
another Millie Rock,
right? Another show, like, oh my God, another. You know, but I think because we do it so much, we kind of sometimes we're all guilty. I take it for granted, like, and then I'll talk to someone in the crowd, or I'll like talk to someone after, and they'll be like, "Yo, this is the coolest shit I've ever been to." Like, right. Oh my God, I can't believe like this is what you guys are. And that kind of like reinstates the feeling for me. But it does get tiresome. I mean, we're doing two to three a month, and you know, between the travel and everything that comes with it, it does get tiring. But I mean, I'd much rather be doing this than what I was doing.
I do think that and it should be said, like, you always do seem to find surprises in, like, strange places. Like, the New England show was, like, surprisingly...
Right. It was good. Yeah. Like, it was... and there were, like, a lot of attractive women. Like, not Amanda. For nothing, there wasn't Amanda there. Anna Stacy. New England was one of our surprisingly better-looking crowds as far as, like, you know, women to men ratio and like the way the women looked, it was one of our best. And it was like, wow, this is like, it's like a gym almost. Like you discovered something and you know, they're hiding the island of Cape Verde in Providence, Rhode Island. But,
so who broke the boat?
Oh, I think there's video of that. Oh, yo, funny. I probably have the funniest perspective of that day than anyone else, just because of the entire day in its totality. Mm. So, just to paint the picture for you, we were in Coney Island for 10 hours, jumped in an Uber to...
Lyft.
I got it. Jumped in a Lyft. In retrospect, it was a Lyft.
Yeah. You're right. The pink mustache.
Yeah, it was a Lyft. Yeah. So we get in the car, and like we're dead. It's me, Rory, Kaz, Lo, and Chris, and we're in a cab, dead. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, how the fuck are we gonna make it through this boat ride? We're asking all the wrong questions. You know, is there food? Like, you know, will they have like energy drinks for us? Like, you know, I at this time I still didn't have a shirt to put on, so we pull up to the dock, and Rory so gracefully gives me a shirt, which if you see the video, it's definitely too small for me.
Well, it's always too small for Rory. So.
Yeah, exactly. He likes to show us tattoos. So we get to the boat, and like, you know, Clarence is there, Dev is at the door to greet us, and like, you guys look like shit. Like, yeah, we kind of feel like shit.
You're wearing Rory's shirt.
Yeah, I feel like shit. You know, my white shorts are no longer white. Like, I'm just get me on this fucking boat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I get on the boat. I find food. I eat. They're like, yeah, you want some Hennessy? I was like, no, please. Like, no, I'll take seltzer water if you have that. So we're drinking. And then, so we had the middle, I think it was the middle room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were slated to, like, build that out from talent and everything. So I'm like, Showtime, going in DJ? And he's like, yeah. So he starts off or whatever. And, you know, it's getting there. It's getting good. And but I'm sitting down the entire time, and then I'm like, I think we kind of need a host. Like, so I text Lo and Chris, like, yo, where are you guys? Lo was like, I'm on the top of the boat, I think, with you guys. Lo was like, I'm on the top of the boat. Chris is like, I'm gonna come down right now. I was like, okay, cool. So Chris comes down, and I want to say within like 7 minutes, Showtime is playing like a Harlem set, so it's just like, you know, all the Harlem Shaking music, all the Get Light music, and I believe Crybaby Cozy was on the boat. So, you know, there was a big battle happening there. It was really, really, really cool. Took mm-hmm. me back to high school. And then, you know, Chris is like bugging on the mic, and I'm like, okay, this is turning into something. So legit, you could see it, like, there was like a universal second wind amongst everybody.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, it's a party. And then I want to say Showtime played...
All Right by Kendrick?
Yes. No. Showtime played Palance. It's like a soca song where mm-hmm. everyone just... One of those unifying black people songs. We like to just jump around with each other. And so then he switches it. It gets a little crazy. He switches it off. Austin gets on. Drops Dreams and Nightmares, mm-hmm. I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I'm seeing, like, chunks of what I assumed to be asbestos coming off the ceiling, and I'm like, okay, this isn't gonna end particularly well. So I back up, I get behind the DJ booth, and he plays All Right, and I'm like, oh my god, I was like, this boat is going to explode. And like, sure enough, he plays it, people are bugging out. So now it's like raining tile, because
people are busting through the
roof. People are busting. So there's
like
this
ceiling right there.
There's this guy who I will not name.
I think we already named him.
The song ends.
Yeah.
And he is, if you see the video, he is legitimately punching panels out of the ceiling. And I'm like, bro. Like, at this point, you're just being destructive.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, the moment has passed.
Right.
You're being destructive. And he's just like, fucking turned up, man. And I'm like, okay. So, to answer your question, Henny Palooza did break the boat. Apologies, Clarence. Apologies to, what is it, the Hornblower yacht?
Okay, yeah.
Apologies to the folks of the Hornblower yacht. That was us.
Did Mac Wilds pay for the deposit?
I invoiced him.
Yeah.
You know, these I haven't heard back. These apps are tricky.
Right.
Well, Kappa Cam.
Yes.
congratulations on a life well lived so far.
Thank you,
and
man.
Who would have thought that the biggest pivot in your life would be at the result of putting your cleat down and turning the wrong
legit,
way? Huh?
Legit. Yeah, it's funny. I think it just shows that you never really know what the fuck is going to roll with.
But you know who does?
Yeah.
Jesus.
In Jesus' name.
Yes.
Word to Kirk Franklin.
Thanks, Cam.
Thanks,
everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real, part of the February surprise run of podcast episodes that we're putting out right now. Jeff, if people want to find out more about It's the Real, if people want to find out more about A Waste of Time with It's the Real, if people want to find out more about our headlining show at SOB's Your Girls Tour, February 23rd, in just a few weeks, where can people go?
You can always run up on me in the streets of Manhattan, come press me, and tell me that you want to have a nice, pleasant conversation where I explain my history to you. You can also go to SoundCloud.com/A Waste of Time. You can go to SoundCloud.com/It's the Real for all of our music streaming there. iTunes, search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We are also on Twitter at It's the Real, Facebook at It's the Real, Instagram at It's the Real. On Instagram, where It's the Real, like I said, but we are also on Snapchat, where it is not It's the Real. It is It's the Real, and It's the Real Eric.
We're so happy that people are digging this podcast. We're over 100 episodes deep, and we want to continue this movement. So, it's up to you guys to please go tell a friend about the podcast and spread the word, and we know that it starts with us right here. So, Jeff, do you have a friend that you would like to tell about A Waste of Time if It's the Real?
Yes. I have a bunch of friends.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm just bragging to it.
Yep.
I want to tell Chops. I want to tell Frasier. The Summer Man, excuse me.
Yep.
I want to tell Amaya. I want to tell
Tony Mui.
Well, okay, so I'm a huge, huge, huge Tony Mui fan, and I just want to tell everybody when they're not watching Life at Complex,
yep, on YouTube,
to listen to our podcast.
Well, I'd like to. I hope that they will mention the podcast on Life at Complex, the
yes,
daily video vlog
that shows how exciting Life at Complex is with Mr. Tony Mui.
I would like to shout out our longtime friend and musical collaborator, Greg Mayo.
Oh, wow.
Who not only does our theme music on this year podcast, but also all of our songs, whether it's Dave Matthews Band's Girls with the Dirty Souths, our new single Waco coming soon, Fire in a Crowded Room, everything going back to when we were kids. Shout out to Greg Mayo. You will see him on February 23rd at SOB's, Your Girls Tour. Am I forgetting anything?
No, I think that's it.
All right, then we'll see you tomorrow.
All right, bye.
Sunset.